4 a.m. over there. That's not going to be fun. I'm Andrew Riley, and this is the Drupal Easy Podcast number 39. Today with us at some ungodly hour in the middle of Europe is Mike Anillo. How's it going, Mike?
Good morning.
Yeah, it's funny because, you know, people can listen to this at any time, but no, we're recording this medium late in America time, really early in European time.
Finally get to see what time it is dark around here. And it apparently it's between 2 and 4 a.m.
Good to know. Yeah. And we also have Ryan Price, who's freshly back from D4D. How's it going, Ryan?
I am catless this evening. Decided that I did not want to get more cups of water spilled on my laptop like last time we recorded one of these at night.
I can't wait to hear about D4D, so let's, we'll blow through these other stories and give you the floor.
Yeah, something happened this week, but I don't, I mean, what has it been like 5 days since we recorded the last one of these? So not exactly scraping the bottom of the barrel here, but there's
one of our stories this, last week. We have to do this new style. We have to put it at the very end, so we have, you know.
That's our lead, right?
Yeah, exactly. You could die if you don't listen to this podcast.
I love it.
Find out more in 30 minutes.
Find out at 11. What module will kill your computer? Tune in at 11 to find out.
Well, there have been a lot of security releases lately, but let's go ahead and get into our five stories so we can get to Ryan's talking about the Boston Drupal Design Camp. So every week we choose five stories that we think might help you out in the world of Drupal. Now, we're going to give you a bunch of links in this podcast. You can always go to drupaleasy.com/podcast to get these links so you don't have to write them down while you're driving your little car down the street. So, Ryan, the first story is yours, and it's about contributors to Drupal.
That is correct. Basically, this blog post is a chart. Go look at it. It's really hard for me to describe it to you over the podcast here and really understand. So my first recommendation is going to be to go to our show notes, if you're not in a car at this time, drupaleasy.com/podcast, and click on this link. So basically, this is a post by Mr. Greg Knadison of Growing Venture Solutions, GVS, and he just took some statistics from the Drupal CVS commits and the number of people that have committed to Drupal over the years. And as you can imagine, it's growing every day, but there are certain sort of areas where it peaks up really, really high or plateaus or dips down. And he has sort of a little explanation for each one of those.
Now, this is just for modules, if I read it right, it looks like. Now, I find interesting is the dips, because that means people actually created accounts and contributed things, and then, or I guess they could have had accounts before, but then the contributions just seem to like drop off for a little bit. I find that pretty interesting.
Yeah, do each of those peaks followed by a dip, are those following Drupal release cycles? I think those are, aren't they?
Let's see.
Pretty much. Well, it's sort of saying that some of them are just based on the beginning of a year. So it's almost seasonal in a way. So he says, in 2006, there was a jump because of Drupal 5. Then in 2007, we saw a lot of activity. I'm going to guess that this had something to do with Views coming out and CCK becoming mature. Mm-hmm. Because I really noticed that there were a lot of modules sort of in response to people understanding all the awesome stuff you could do with Drupal 5. When Drupal 6 got released. And then at a certain point, it seemed to sort of flatten out. And it's just interesting to go ahead and take a look at this, and it's a really good story for us to have in our links that you want to go follow and look at.
I think there's two numbers here that are kind of interesting, and the first one is, I mean, so this is the total number of committers per month for contrib, and the peak value is a little bit lower than I kind of thought it might be. It's somewhere in the neighborhood of like 550, 570 people. And that's, you know, considering there's, what, over 4,000 modules now, the fact that there's only maybe 1/8 of those modules, or there's
one well, and this is, but this modules. Is, this is, it's per month, right? So
right.
That's the reason why sometimes it dips back down, is because if you stop maintaining your module, your number won't show up on this list.
Right. I guess what the point I was trying to make was it only 1/8 of all modules appear to be updated on a monthly basis.
Yes.
Yeah, I'd buy that.
Yeah. And that's, I don't know if that's, you know, that's very rounded, that statement. But that's one thing that threw me, not threw me, but surprised me, was, you know, kind of the absolute value. And another thing was, and it looks like that the pace of committers is kind of leveling off. You know, between that fourth peak, which I can, the graph is so tiny it's hard to see, might be, you know, 2008, late 2008 until now. You know, there was a similar dip, but the dip looks to be a little more elongated than in previous years. So it might be, you know, the first indication that maybe, you know, the size of the Drupal community might be leveling off a little bit.
Well, what do you guys think? I think it's something to do with the maturity of the project, that at a certain point, it's going to get harder to innovate. It's going to get harder to write contrib modules that haven't been written already.
Mm-hmm.
Because
true.
We've kind of filled all the holes.
Well, not only that, but look at just the maturity of Drupal. We now have, you know, the fields in core and all that. When I first started Drupal, people almost had to create modules to do quite a bit of stuff, but now you don't really have to. Core does a lot, and there's a lot of contributed modules out there. So I think that maturity is really leading to it kind of leveling off.
Yeah, definitely.
That's a good point.
Okay, well, let's move on to our next story, which is, oddly enough, about a new Drupal module. Mike, I think this is your story about Dig.
Yeah, I've been a longtime fan of Dig for, you know, since it was pretty small. I was the kind of nerd who used to watch the screensavers, and so followed Kevin Rose for a few years now. And I was aware that they were using Dig internally for a number of projects, and, you know, a couple days ago, actually, they posted on their blog that they were contributing some code back based on their use of Dig. And I just thought it was kind of cool, you know, other than the White House and, you know, some of the other large you know, websites out there like The Economist that have contributed code back. I find this one kind of interesting because it's something that I follow every day and I'm on their site every day and I'm like, oh, cool, they're using Dig. And so they've actually released you know, they're all very Dig-related modules, but the fact that they're kind of the official versions of these Dig-related modules because they were written by people who do Dig. There's the Diggable module, which is kind of, as they say, the official way to integrate Drupal with Dig. And then the Dig login, which allows you to log in to your user site, your Drupal site, using your Dig credentials, using OAuth. So I thought that was kind of cool as well.
Yeah, I like that, you know, companies are starting to put out the official modules. You know, we have Malum, now we have Dig. So it's kind of nice to see that companies are putting it out and recognizing Drupal as, you know, a platform that they want to support.
And plus it gives, I mean, it's almost instant credibility to the module as yeah. well. Mm-hmm. You know, on the Diggable module, I will put the link in the show notes, obviously, but it's pretty clear that it's developed and maintained by Dig Inc. So you, right there, without even knowing, I mean, it's kind of funny because the maintainer is Dig Publisher. but it's like instant credibility for the module, which I kind of like. So
you would say you dig it?
I dig it. See, if it wasn't 4 a.m., I would have come up with that line on my own.
Stop and digging yourself into a hole.
Oh, look at you. Two of them in a row. That's nice. What else you got?
Yeah, I'm all out. Okay, and the next story is actually one of mine. It's the Adopt a Drupal Code of Contact wow, adopt a Drupal code of conduct. And this is by, is it Mosh or Mosh?
Mosh.
Mosh Weissman. And basically he's just saying that, you know, our community is growing bigger, and he proposes that we adopt the Ubuntu code of conduct. Now, the interesting thing was, you know, I read through it and it seemed, you know, nice. It was a little light and all. But there seems to be a lot of comments from people, you know, not really liking it. There are a lot of people who like it, don't get me wrong. But a lot of people, you know, basically said, you know, the trolls don't care. They're not going to follow into or, you know, fall into this. So it's kind of useless. Why bother? Have you guys had a chance to read through it?
I skimmed the first part before we started talking, and I'm looking at it now as you read. But I don't see how, why anybody would have a problem with this. I haven't gotten to the comments yet.
The Ubuntu Code of Conduct is a very sensible human way of dealing with and talking to other people. The person who's the official, you know, it's his full-time job, community manager of Ubuntu is a guy named John O'Bacon, and he's actually written a book called The Art of Community, which I have read, and he talks about their code of conduct and the way that they run their community. It's several years ahead of the Drupal community at this point. And they have a formal way for, you know, including new people into their contributions group, and they have a way of, you know, electing people to approve people to join the contributors group and all this kind of other stuff. This is a really good place to start, and I love how Mosh says, let's please not have a lot of bike shedding and just adopt this really quickly, and then there's just a bunch of bike shedding.
When I actually looked through it, I didn't see anything that seemed to be objectionable. It's not like people are going to be drug out and shot. It's just a nice thing for people when they're coming into the community to read and just to kind of, you know, see, okay, this is how it is. I see it as a decent thing for the community.
It's tough to argue with something where the headings are be considerate, be respectful, be collaborative, you know. I mean, how do you argue with that?
Well, there's about 40 comments for and against that are arguing its various points.
Oh, my.
Yeah, but it has a plus 14 right now on the GDO scale. So I wonder if that's sort of like a good way of saying I support this is by using those little up and down arrows. If you guys are logged into groups.drupal.org, you can use the little vote arrows right near the top of the page.
That's usually right. The vote up down module.
That's right.
Now, just a quick little tangent. When did GDO get the vote up down and the points?
Right around DrupalCon.
Oh, really? Okay. Yep. I noticed they've been adding a lot of new features. Like, I just went in to manage some of my subscriptions. I was like, whoa, this is like 10 times as more complex than what I had previously.
Well, part of that was with the upgrade to Drupal 6 also. Mm-hmm.
This would be a great segue to a story that we just asked about the new theme maintainer. That's probably not the right phrase, but Drupal.org, the association just hired someone to kind of shepherd the new theme and the next site that's going to get the new theme treatment is the group site. So I'm not saying it's related. I'm just saying.
Well, while I was at D4D, I did talk to somebody who's like a project manager on, I think it's the actual Drupal.org redesign. And hopefully she will email me and we'll get her on the show at some point. Maybe she'll be able to shed some light on stuff like that too.
Yeah, well, actually, since you brought up D4D, we might as well move into that next story because I think it's going to be a big one.
Oh, yeah. So, you know, we talked about this last week. If you haven't heard our podcast from last week, don't worry about it because we never say anything good. But exactly. If you did hear it, you'll know that I just went to Boston for the Design for Drupal camp. It was their second year, and Susan and Jeannie and a bunch of other volunteers put it on at MIT. And I have to say, they have some of the nicest facilities that you could possibly ever want to put on a camp. The whole entire building itself is just filled with these gigantic pictures and bright colors, and there's no right angles to be seen, and lots of like see-through doors and, you know, built-in benches. I could go on and on about just the cool things that are this building, not to mention Cambridge, the neighborhood. At least during the day, Cambridge is pretty nice. At night, it gets kind of slow and there's not a lot to do there. But really, really awesome. When I got there too, it turned out that there was an American craft beer festival. Complete tangent, but it was really fun.
Hey,
completely unrelated.
Yeah. It just happened to be going on. But a lot of people who were, you know, from out of town, they had planned to also go. I guess it was happening all weekend. I tried about 70 beers, and it was really, really good.
70?
Well, it was the official count was 69, and there were three of us. We were all sharing, but yes.
Wow. So this is probably going to be a real short discussion about D4D then.
Yes. How much of it do you remember? So were there actually like D4D? I saw some good, you know, tweets about it, but you know, what was like the general feeling? Were there designers there? Were there developers there? You know, what did they focus on?
Well, the best story I can tell about that was from my session, and I did a case study, but it was called Drupal on Your TV. And it's a case study of a project that I did for a theater up in Schenectady, New York. And at the beginning of the session, I knew I had a lot of references to views and how to use views and flags and different things that I use for the specific project. And so I said, how many people have ever, you know, created views with relationships? And about 75% of the people raised their hand, and I said, oh, well, I'm not going to have a lot to describe. How many people are very, very comfortable with overriding views theme templates? There were two people that did not raise their hand.
Wow.
So it was a very, at least the room that I was, you know, running my session was a very advanced room. And actually, Todd Neenkirk from Four Kitchens was in my session. So I was feeling very special. He's one of the maintainers of the 960 module. And he actually did his session about 960, I think, right before mine. So I had a really good time at my session, and it was very advanced people there. I know that there were some newcomers and beginners, but I didn't get to talk to a lot of them.
So is this an annual conference now, or what's the?
Yeah, I believe so. So the first one I think was in June last year. So it seems like it's going to be an every year kind of thing.
So would you go back?
Oh, I mean, Boston is great, and you know, now because of I did some training up in Boston, you know, and I've met some people up there, been to the events. I bump into these people at DrupalCon. Boston's like, it's like going and bumping into some friends that I just don't see very often.
Okay, well, so you've made nice with the community there, but education-wise, would you go again?
Yeah, I got some really good experience. There was a great session by a guy named, and I typed his name here, and now I don't see it. Oh, Steve Fisher. Here we go. His Twitter handle is Hello Fisher, and he has just been hired by Palantir. He is Canadian, but he's moving to Chicago. Steve Fisher gave a great talk about sort of user experience and understanding your user's intent. It was one of those very, you know, UX heavy kind of talks, but there were no interface elements in there at all. It was just slides and bullet points and quotes and pointers to other people's ideas and books and things that you should check out. Really, really helpful. And I got to, you know, hang out with him a little bit. We went to lunch. He was a great guy to talk to.
Well, I was just going through the website, and it looks like a lot of the presenters have been posting, you know, slides and demo code. So even if it didn't go, you could probably get a fair amount out of it, it looks like.
Well, and they were videotaping. I don't know what exactly their plan is for getting the videos posted, but I know that just about everything was videotaped. There were keynote sessions right after lunch every day. One was by a guy named Jared Spool, and it was from what I hear, very good. I was actually preparing for my talk at the time, so I didn't get to see it. And the other one was by Ben Finkley, who we all know is the famed SEO expert. We actually had Ben on our show probably about 20 episodes ago now, Mike.
Yeah, that was a while ago. We talked to him about the Drupal SEO book from Pact Publishing.
Yep.
But I got a chance to catch up with Ben the day before. I was actually doing a little Drupal road trip, so I didn't actually get to stay for Ben's talk. I had to leave right in the middle of it. One of the interesting talks that I wasn't really sure how it was going to go going into it, but you know, given the reputation of this presenter, I decided to sit in. It was by Jeff Robbins of Lullabot, and it was called Beyond Web 2.0, Designing for the Undesignable. And he sort of gave I can't even say a brief history of the web, because I would say a good half of his talk was talking about, we started with these plain, simple websites, and he showed some, you know, pictures of websites that he built back in the early 90s. And, you know, progressing forward, we got animations, we got background images, we got tables, we get interactive things like Flash, Web 2.0, web services, RSS. And that was when it started to sort of come together towards like building up toward the point of his talk, which was, you know, you've got some things that are readable by machines, some things that are readable by humans. And then there are lots of humans who actually can't read the things that are supposed to be readable by humans. They're not accessible. You know, if you're blind, if you're hearing impaired, if you're motion impaired, you can't use all these websites. So now there's sort of this movement back in the other direction to load more meaning into your markup, into your HTML. And then he started talking about mobile devices and, you know, tablet devices. And then finally he said, plus you can get the internet in your car if you really think about it. So now all of that screen reader accessibility stuff really starts to make sense of, well, why should I bake, you know, Section 508 accessibility into my websites? Because somebody might be having it read to them by, you know, Kit from Knight Rider. And he shows this great slide of David Hasselhoff. And that was the moment for me when I really understood, like, why did I just sit through and listen to this half an hour history of the internet? And it was very pointed. It was very good. So thanks, Jeff.
Just a side tangent. Can either of you guys tell me what Kit's evil brother's name was?
Yeah, every episode, you have to prove what a nerd you are. Every episode, it's like there's a contest with some other podcast that we don't know about who's got the nerdiest host.
But every episode, you're covering that you don't know the answer.
I have no idea, but I'm gonna guess. Does it rhyme with Kit? Is it something like Schmidt or Bit or Hit?
No, it's actually Car, but it's spelled weird.
Wow.
K-A-R-R?
I believe so.
That's awesome. Awesome. Wish I knew that. I wish I had that knowledge in my arsenal.
Hey, you went and saw the A-Team. I haven't seen that.
That movie was awesome. I don't care what anybody says.
Well, I heard it was ridiculously awesome.
It was. It was, I mean, it had everything a summer movie should have. It was great.
I guess just going on with our natural segues, a nice thing would be Drupal 7 being released in the summer. But there's a website out there that's it's kind of interesting. It's a really simple website. It's called Drupal 7 Release Date. And this is just, I happened to find it. I don't know if it was on Twitter and my RSS feeds. But essentially, someone has created a prediction based on the number of bugs that when Drupal 7 will actually come out. So right now, as of the time of recording, it's 59 bugs open in, August 27th.
Yeah, I think this comes directly from, I don't know if it's directly, but Dries did something like this in his keynote at DrupalCon, where he looked at a chart over time of the number of critical bugs. Mm-hmm. And he kind of just regressed the chart to say, if we keep up at the current pace, then best case is, you know, we can release this thing in 2 weeks. Worst case is it'll be sometime in September. So I think what this website is doing is basically automating that regression process.
Yeah, it's just using a linear regression with the bug count.
Yeah, which is kind of a cool idea because it gives people, you know, just some sort of an idea based on the pace. And it's kind of funny because if you follow CHX on Twitter, he's not so optimistic. And have you guys? Do you guys follow him on Twitter at all? Yeah,
I do, but I think he's been on kind of a pessimistic run lately.
Yeah, he can definitely be a glass half empty kind of guy. But Dries took a few days off apparently over the past week, and I think it was yesterday or the day before. One of CHX's tweets was, "Welcome back, Dries. Your inbox should be full of issues that are ready to be committed. Have fun." So maybe over the next few days we'll see that 59 drop.
Yeah. And it looks like this was done by Activism Labs, and it's just a nice little simple website that I check out every once in a while, and it's got some links to basically say how you can help fix bugs and make that release date so much sooner.
Excellent. Fantastic. Where is that? Activism Labs, where are they out of? I feel like I've heard of them before.
They do grassroots project management tools, and they are located in...
Jeremy Blanchard is at University of Oregon, so maybe they're out of Portland.
That sounds good to me. They're up where the vampires live.
Yeah, that's a great-looking site, though. Mm-hmm. Kudos to him, yes. Them.
And to the glittery vampires.
Again, proving your geek cred, because I have no idea what the heck you're talking about.
Real quick story. My wife tricked me into seeing the first Twilight movie.
You're such a liar.
No. Seriously, I am a total geek for vampires and stuff like that. She's like, yeah, it's a vampire movie. I knew nothing. I go sit in the movie, like, I don't know, 20 minutes in. I was just like, what did I sign myself up for? Never will I be tricked like that again.
All right, so let us know. Give us a review of the next one, okay? Because I'm sure you'll be seeing that one too.
No, I never saw number two. And I can't see number three. I've got a concert tickets to go see Justin Bieber.
I take back everything I said.
Okay, let's just glance right over this topic. Let's go into some Drupal Easy news. Ryan, I think you've got a whole list of things.
Yes, well, I do have... how do I say this? A soapbox and a public apology. Let's put it as this. I am very sorry to everyone who sends us email through our contact form asking about public training. We do not want you to stop asking about public training, but I have to say that I'm sorry that we've had to turn so many of you away because we just do not have public training right now. We do offer training classes. We do offer public training classes. It was something that we were very into a while ago. Our project schedule is just keeping us really busy right now. So if anybody wants to just find a discreet way to make our clients bankrupt, then we can get back to doing public training.
But what are you saying? What are you saying?
I don't want you to cause them any physical harm. Just give us some time.
Just poverty.
This needs to have like one of those little, remember like in the 80s when one of the newscasters would do an editorial and they'd have the thing, kind of like the lower third that would basically say.
The opinions of Ryan Price are not represented by.
Yes. Okay. So go ahead and say that and then I'll shut up.
we are very interested to hear from everyone from the East Coast, from the West Coast, from the Midwest. We get a lot of really interesting requests, including some people from overseas. We sometimes get asked if we do online training. The answer to that right now is that we don't like the results that we've gotten from online training. It's really hard to tell if anybody's actually paying attention. And the technology, I think, is just fine for doing stuff like that, but... We found it to be not as effective. We really like to be in the same room as you guys.
Yeah, we didn't feel a connection. And without that connection, we can't really adjust the pace. We're just kind of, you know, going at a pace and hoping that people are there. But without being able to see people's faces, it's really difficult to know.
Well, what we can do is send me out to the location. You guys can do the web-based training. If they don't pay attention or they look like they have a question but they're not going to ask it, I'll tase them.
Well, you would need like a transporter because people might be in 15 different locations.
Hmm. We'll have to work on remote tasing.
Yeah, get on that. remote tasing. I just want to make sure I say that we do love our clients. And only Ryan wants them to go bankrupt. I do not want them to go bankrupt. I want them to prosper and to hire us again.
Yeah.
Okay, continue.
And Ryan, when you're traveling around for this public training, could you bring me back a Philly sandwich?
Yes, a Philly cheesesteak.
Yeah.
Or some hoagies. I love the hoagies up in Philly. Really, so good. Yeah. So after Boston, I went down to Philly, visit some family and to bump into some people that I only know from the internet, as it were. I visited a place in Philly called Independence Hall. It's not the one that you're thinking of, though.
Benjamin Franklin.
No. It's actually a co-working space. Really, really briefly co-working, an office that's rented collectively by a bunch of people. They all work together. It's very similar to like a code sprint, but 24 hours a day, if that makes any sense at all. And also I visited the offices of ZivTech, which is basically right across the street, and met a guy there named Aaron, and a couple of their other developers gave out some Drupal patches. The coveted Drupal patches, and just wanted to say hi to all those people. Hey, Philly.
Okay, so that was in the past, not in the future, right?
Right, already done. Hello to them.
Okay, hello the entire city of Philadelphia, the city of brotherly love, if I remember properly.
Hey, let me throw one more thing in here for Drupal Easy News I just thought about is, actually for one of our clients, we are trying to lead the effort to add a Haitian Creole language to Drupal.org on the localized.drupal.org site. So if there's anybody out there who is interested in helping out or who could use the Haitian Creole language, I will put the link in the show note. And please chime in. We're just trying to get this off the ground. And it's probably biggest in the Southeast because there's a pretty big Haitian population in Florida. But by all means, jump in and see if we can get this off the ground.
Sounds cool.
So, Andrew, I think it might be that time to talk about our lovely sponsor, Web-Enabled.
Yes, it is that time.
Awesome. So just a quick plug for Web-Enabled here. Is that, I think you guys have heard us talk about Web-Enabled before. They're very, very developer-friendly. You know, you can get a website spun up in just a few minutes with Drupal or a number of Drupal applications, Managing News, for example, OpenPublish. They've got some deals with top-notch themes. You can get your top-notch themes installed right there. And then they also have a really neat way of backing up your site. So let's say you spun up Web-Enabled, you get your two applications for free, and they do things other than Drupal as well, like Magento and Joomla, if you're introducing those things. You've gotten this site developed to a certain degree, and now it's time to deploy. So they have a method of deploying to 5 or 6 pretty major web hosts, like 1&1, things like that. But they also have a really great backup function. They basically just, you push a button and it creates a snapshot of your website, all the code, all the log files, your database, everything that you would need in order to just deploy that website anywhere that you want to go. And or just bring it down to your local machine to have a local install. Let's say that you got to go get an airplane and you want to keep working on the site for the next couple hours. There's a great backup function. Just takes a few seconds, and now you've got your whole website just zipped up and right there for you.
Awesome.
And backing up's just always good, period. But you say on the airplane, I never actually work on airplanes. I always end up playing Plants vs. Zombies.
Yeah, that game is quite addictive.
Yeah, the neighbor cracks me up.
The grumbler?
Yeah. Okay, so every podcast, each of the hosts chooses their pick of the week. Sometimes it's a module, sometimes it's a theme, it could be a book, it could be anything. Mike, why don't you tell us about your pick of the week?
Yeah, I was surprised. You know, I kind of was the last one to look at the rundown today, and I was surprised that I actually got to pick this one. This is a new module by Ryan James and Renee Hache, or Hash. It's H-A-C-H-E, so I apologize in advance for mispronouncing your name. Actually, I can't really apologize in advance since I probably already mispronounced it, but I still apologize. It is the Semantic CCK module. And anybody who's used Semantic Views knows and understands what Semantic CCK does. But the quick rundown is that Semantic CCK module allows you to customize the HTML that is output for your CCK fields, which is something that normally is reserved for people who like to theme. But for those of you who don't want to get your hands dirty with theming and would rather handle this kind of a little bit higher up in the stack, this is a great little module. It just lets you go in, and if you don't want your, say, the label of your CCK fields to be wrapped with a HTML label tag, perhaps you want a span tag with a specific class, you can do that using this module directly from Drupal's interface.
So this would be helpful with things like microformats?
Yeah, it can be microformats, or just it allows you to, if you're really picky about your HTML and what gets output, this is probably for you.
So this is like the unofficial sibling of the Semantic Views module?
Absolutely, yep. It's analogous to Semantic Views in every way that I can tell.
Sounds cool. I'll have to use it because I hate having to dump out an entire node template just to change one simple little thing.
Exactly, and that's what this, you know, this module and Semantic Views, for that matter, is kind of the idea behind.
Mm-hmm. Oh, very cool. Well, my pick of the week is a module called Image Cache Actions. And believe it or not, I just found out about this today. I had heard about it in the past, but today was the first time I actually got to use it. It's by Dan Morrison, and it just adds on some actions for image cache. Now, I say that like it's some kind of simple and boring thing. Image cache, by default, even though it's kind of a weird name, you can scale, you can crop, and you can do a couple small manipulations to your images. But this adds on, you know, commonly used ones. So you can add watermarks to it. You can desaturate your pictures. You can do a whole ton of really cool features. In this case, you can add rounded corners. In this case, one of my artists wanted me to make an image look, it's kind of hard to say, but it's square with like a little like notch cut out on the side. I was thinking, I could kind of do that with PNGs, but that's kind of sloppy and IE. Or I could give the client a PSD, and then they could, you know, drop their images in and properly cut them out. But what am I thinking? Clients don't do that. So this was a really simple way. I just cut out the, you know, cutout area, told image action or image cache actions that I was going to use this as a watermark, and it did all the alpha PNG stuff, put it into one image, and then it displayed on the page seamlessly. It was awesome.
Yeah, that's fantastic. I've known about this module for a while, mainly because it's kind of an aside, but the creator and maintainer, Dan Morrison, I actually hired him to do some work for me about 4 years ago in like late 2006 when I was just starting up with Drupal. I had a client and there was some stuff I didn't understand that Dan took care of for me. So that's kind of a cool little aside, but this module is pretty cool. It's I can't remember the last time I've used it, but it's it works as advertised.
Mm-hmm. Now, when you worked with Dan Morrison, was he always singing Brown Eyed Girl?
Constantly. Couldn't get him to shut up. It was ridiculous.
And singing about Wild Nights. Okay, Ryan, what's your pick of the week?
My pick of the week actually comes out of D4D. During my session, there were two other sessions going on by excellent people. One of them was Jake Strawn, and he did a presentation about his theme. He's actually been working on this for quite a while. It's called Omega, and the idea is that this is a really great bass theme. He steals a lot of ideas from other people's bass theme. It's based on the 960 grid system. If you're a fan of that, you'll want to check this theme out. And he also publishes his Omega theme with a companion module, which has really fun things like exportable theme settings and Drush integration. So he's got basically a Drush command. You say Drush Omega sub theme, and then you type out the name of your theme and it will just generate your whole sub theme for you.
Awesome.
Yeah, yeah. And it's go ahead.
I was just gonna say that's kind of like the Xenophile module for Xen.
Yeah, definitely. So his big announcement during D4D was that he has more or less completely upgraded all of his customizations for Omega to Drupal 7. So there's a really great Drupal 7 version of Omega. It also comes with a couple of things like default blocks to stick in all of your regions so that you can see what the block layout looks like while you're developing. Because I've noticed, particularly lately, I want to show the client what the site looks like, but we don't have all the blocks ready. Like they're supposed to be views, or they're supposed to have some, you know, widget in them that we don't have the password for it yet, or we don't want to include it yet, or whatever it happens to be. So I like the idea of having a bunch of just dummy blocks you can stick in there. I think one of the coolest things, and I've never seen this in a theme before, is that whole export theme settings feature is kind of a really cool one.
Yeah, it's funny that this is your pick of the week. He actually came out with a screencast. It was probably like a week ago. I didn't watch it till 2 days ago. Jake, I'm talking about. And I just put the link there in the show notes. But it's like a 35-minute screencast about Omega on Drupal 7, where it goes through everything. I mean, if you have the 35 minutes and you're really into theming, definitely check it out, because this seems like it'd be a really, really good tool. I mean, just like you said, Ryan, the number of regions it's a really complete package for a starter theme, on par with some of the other ones that we always talk about.
And I don't know if he's updated this to be Drupal 7 yet, but he does have a sample sub-theme if you want to see what one of those looks like. It's called Alpha. No, he hasn't released the Drupal 7 version of Alpha yet, but if you go to himerus.com, which is H-I-M-E-R-U-S, hit that site, which is Jake's site, is running Alpha. And so he even recommends, like, please use these modules along with Alpha, because, you know, they'll work really well. And I stuck a couple of fun things in there that will just have automatic integration here.
Wait, I've got a quick nerd moment. Did he really name his two themes Alpha and Omega?
Yeah, and I believe he also has one called Delta, but don't quote me on that.
So the first and last letters of the Greek alphabet.
Yeah.
He's kind of limiting himself because...
Only 24.
I know. So, and then he's done. So,
Maybe he could change his base or start doubling up, you know.
He could. Alpha, alpha.
Yeah.
Alpha, beta.
And then eventually he'll become, you know, a fraternity or sorority like Lambda, Lambda, Lambda.
There you go. All right. I'm glad we worked that out for Jake. No need to worry. Plenty of names.
Okay. In addition to our picks of the week, we choose one site of the week that is a new Drupal site that we're highlighting. But here's the cool thing. You, as the listener, can actually have some power over this. You can submit a site. You could have worked on it, or you might have just run across it and liked it. You can just submit that at drupaleasy.com/site of the week. So let's see. This week's pick is it Dahon? Dahon?
That's a wonderful question, and I wish I knew. They're not from America originally, I don't think.
I swear you guys choose people's names and site of the week just to, not that I can pronounce that many words, but you swear you guys pick them so I can't pronounce them.
That's exactly. That is our only criteria for picking things.
Okay, well, it's Dahan Folding Bicycles. I'm just going with that.
John Smith does not have a chance on our podcast.
Exactly.
Yeah, this suggestion comes from Aaron at ZivTech. I was visiting them up in Philly, and they showed me this site. I said, this is beautiful. And he said, actually, we've got a write-up on the Drupal.org homepage, and we'll definitely link to that in the show notes. And just if you go look at this case study, I mean, number one, it's a pretty nicely written little case study, but they have some really interesting challenges. Like the first thing that really caught my attention was that they're using domain access. So for each of the different languages and different countries that they're in, they have a different domain. So for example, they have us.dahan.com and uk.dahan.com and probably fr and de, and I think they also have Asian countries too, like China and different places that you can go and just, they have a very, very multinational presence here, lots of different languages. And they talked about some of the things they had to do in order to get things translated. They were moving everything over from static sites, static HTML. Their one content type has 112 CCK fields in it, which is the content type for the bike.
Holy cow.
Yeah. And they have faceted search. So lots and lots of just interesting stuff going into this site, and it's very, very pretty.
Yeah, looking through their site, it looks like they're definitely using IE6, the Google Analytics module, nice menus. What else did I see?
And they have a list of some of the more prominent, you know, sort of high profile modules that they used, and they even talked about for their project management style, they have a special module they wrote so that on any page the client can click a button and send a bug report to their Unfuttle account.
Wow! And just looking at these bikes, some of these don't look like they're even foldable. It's pretty impressive.
Yeah, I mean, that's funny. It's really cool stuff.
Being where I am for the summer, we see these all the time. It's kind of funny that you picked that. You know, this is our pick of the week. Because I didn't have anything to do with this pick. This is all Ryan. But we see these bikes constantly on the trains and on the trams and the buses and stuff. And my kids are just enthralled with these bikes because a lot of them are literally like little Transformers bikes. Some of them even have like their own little pouch that you fold up the bike and it goes in like this pouch that you can like sling over your shoulder, and you would never know it's a bike until you see someone in the train station unzipping their pouch. And it kind of reminds me of, you know, like the Iron Man briefcase suit, you know? So it's a beautiful site. I love the image. I mean, the graphics on the site are fantastic. The like those images where it's a photograph and then kind of a graphic of a semi-transparent person in front of the real image. I don't know if I described that properly, but...
Well, they can always just go to the site if they go to our show notes at drupaleasy.com/podcast.
Absolutely.
Now, you can always stalk us if you want on Twitter. We have, let's see, Drupal Easy, and then I'm Andrew M. Riley, all one word. Ryan is Liberator with the 2.0 spelling. And Mike is Ultimike. Again, those are all in the show notes. And also, if you ever want to leave us a voicemail, you can call us at 321-441-3964. And Ryan, for international people, can they just Skype in?
Yeah, they could Skype. Probably the easiest is to search for Ryan Price, who lives in Orlando.
Okay. And just remember that if you do leave us a voicemail, we might actually use it during one of the future podcasts, which is pretty cool, I suppose. And if you just want to get in contact with us, it's drupaleasy.com/contact. Okay, well, this is Andrew Riley saying adios for podcast number 39.
See ya.